we have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs on Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you was going to be this good, but it feels good!
First, I need the national championship.
Welcome on in, everyone, to the boardroom. Maddie coming at you here alongside Sam, Johnny, and Josh after our Northwestern victory. In the words of Brad Evans, someone I look up to on Twitter, quote, Illinois is drunk on complacency. Let's get our initial reactions from the game. Go ahead.
A win is a win. That's what I have to say, okay? I know a lot of people are going to be disappointed about an inconsistent performance, but at the end of the day, we got the dub.
Yeah, I mean, two rough NUs in a row, Nebraska, Northwestern, but 2-0, 2-0.
That was the good. I think it's fair to be frustrated if you're an Illinois fan right now. You came out barely unscathed against basically the bottom two teams in the Big Ten. It took an overtime win. It took an IO prayer, which Johnny literally said before that long three. Johnny, do you want to say?
Yeah, I said take a three from the logo, IO, and he just pulls up.
I think
you said
from the State Farm the State Farm logo there, about 28 feet.
Splash! I mean, that's a big time player making a big time play, even when he's on an off night. So once again, that's where I think, like, obviously we're disappointed that we're not blowing teams out, but at the same time, appreciate how this team always finds a way to win, and appreciate how we have one of the best players in college basketball, and he always comes through for us.
No, I absolutely agree. I don't want to take anything away from the fact that they did win, but I think, again, going back to Brad's tweet, like, Illinois is just, at times, complacent. They go up big. They're up 15 before Io scores his first point in the first half, and you think you're going to cruise to an easy, you know, 25-30-point win, which I know is not realistic, but they let Northwestern back in time and time again. They go on a huge run, and they let teams get back in the game. They did that against Nebraska. They did that against Northwestern, and of course, it's amazing to have a primetime player like Io come in and close the game for 2 years now. But I think at this point in the season, you would like to see your top five team close teams out when you have a 15-point lead in the first half.
I have to interrupt this podcast because SVP's opening segment tonight is it's like a national player of the year ? And then it's Io DeSunmu who is the lead man on that.
I wouldn't say you're interrupting. I would say you're one of the members of the podcast. So anytime you talk is really more of just like...
No, I understand. It's pretty special to see that SVP doing it.
No.
And this could also just be a graphic that I'm looking up, a really cool edit by someone. We're used to that in Illini Nation, but it looks real. It's from Trevor Valise.
Okay. Yes, we love our good graphics here. It's our passion. Any other takeaways here?
It's just weird because... We are definitely annoyed with the inconsistency, but have you ever been more annoyed during a 6-game win streak than right now?
No.
Like, at the same time, we take a step back and it's like, okay, just for whatever reason, this team loves to play to the level of the competition and they shine in the big moments. It's just, I think we're all just trying to, like, set our expectations for a tournament run, and we know you can't slip up. So that's why we're maybe, like, more negative than we would be if this was a 2019 team beating a Northwestern team by 7 points.
Yeah, I mean, you're a double-digit favorite, and, you know, the game is within 1 point inside of 4 minutes. I think that these frustrations are fair, but at the same time, I'll take every frustration in the world if it means a six-game win streak.
Yeah. I watched my game with my dad today, and he goes, How nervous are you that they're going to lose to a 15 seed or a 16 seed? I'm like, they're not doing anything to calm my nerves. Like, I know they have Io, so they're going to pull away eventually. But, like, we're going to be worried in those types of games.
I'm tired of fucking talking about this shit.
Yeah,
this 15.
Yeah.
We'll beat Liberty.
Okay. You know what? Until we actually are struggling against a 15 seed, I'm going to go ahead and give Illinois the benefit of the doubt that they will not struggle against a 15 seed. Again, I would never compare Nebraska or Northwestern to a 15 seed. You cannot compare the level of competition. You cannot compare the level of athletes between those two teams. You cannot.
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple top 100 guys on Northwestern, as much as we hate them, like
yes.
Miller Kopp, Robbie Buran. Like, those guys, were highly recruited players that you won't see on a 16 seed.
You got an extremely good coach in Chris Collins. Well, let's
and,
play.
And Nebraska's extremely? Coach was extremely the Bulls head coach. Yeah. Like Nebraska has an NBA level coach yes. and a lot of transfers who were really highly recruited guys.
Well, actually, he's not NBA level because he got fired from NBA.
Okay, well, he did good things at Iowa State at the very least.
Let's play a quick guess that spread. If Illinois is playing a 15 seed tomorrow in the tournament, name your favorite 15 seed from your favorite random conference.
Yeah,
Sam.
I think it'll be American this year. Just okay. looking at
yeah,
at the
who's coming out? Who's coming out of the American League this year?
Or he's saying American from the Patriot.
Oh, American yeah. from the Patriot.
Yeah, a little revenge.
So what?
They're 2-2, Sam.
Check their strength of schedule. You don't. You haven't watched a single Patriot. You don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, 2-2, you can still win. It doesn't matter. You just got to yeah. win the conference. Do just the conference tournament. That's all that matters. What's the spread?
16.
Yeah,
at
16
least.
Feels about
16,
right.
18. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, who's like Kofi? Who's going to deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I feel like what we want to see in these next couple of games is you have Minnesota on the road and you've got Michigan State. Those are two games where we would love to see continue this win streak, continue the consistency. And even if this Minnesota game is a close one, they have beaten Iowa at home. They have beaten Michigan at home. I think they've beaten Wisconsin at home, or they've beaten Ohio State at home. So this is a very good Minnesota team at home.
One that we dismantled.
We destroyed them.
Yes.
So if we can see a couple more wins and just really solidify ourselves in the 2-3 range, that'd be really nice.
Absolutely. Should we kick it to someone who's maybe a little bit disappointed right now from that loss?
Yeah, our friend.
Yeah, so we caught up last night with Dave Revzin of BTN. Just an outstanding human being. He tells some incredible stories about his time working at ESPN, moving over to BTN, calling games, all that fun stuff. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Revzin. We'd like to welcome in a very special guest here today. He's the lead studio host at the Big Ten Network. He's actually a New York Times bestseller, college sports play-by-play guy, Dave Revzin. So, Dave, thank you so much for taking the time out of the very busy Big Ten basketball season to chat here with us today. Let's start with Big Ten basketball. Do you have an objective ranking of the top four at the top of the standings? How is it shaking out in your opinion so far?
I mean, I feel like it's a bit of a loaded question with this crew, Matt. It feels like there's only one correct answer.
It might have been, yes, a very leading question, but I want to hear your honest opinion.
I would say I would still lean to Michigan. I mean, I was really interested to watch Michigan yesterday, as I think we all were, just kind of what would this look like? And there have been so many teams we've seen come back from COVID pauses this year and just be kind of a shadow of their former selves and take time to get going. It took Michigan all of 20 minutes, right? I mean, it was really, yeah. It was really pretty remarkable performance, maybe 25. I mean, I guess, you know, probably about 5 minutes into that second half, the Davison elbow landed on Mike Smith, whether it was on purpose or not. And I think that kind of got Michigan going. So I'd stay with them. I'd probably go with the Illini next.
Appreciate
I think
it.
I'd have Thank you. Yeah, I think I'd have Ohio State after them, and then Iowa fourth. There's just too much inconsistency for me with Iowa. I mean, I really think right now we're talking a top three more than a top four. I feel like Iowa's dropped off, and you know, I mean, even just given the NCAA tourney bracket that came out this weekend, they were a four seed. I just think there's a pretty significant gap between those top three and Iowa, which isn't to say I don't think Iowa can make a deep run. I mean, they have one fabulous player. I think Wieskamp's really good, too. I just don't know if you defend as inconsistently as they do, whether or not you can be maybe you can be a Final Four team. I don't know that you'd be a national champ.
That's fair. You probably got to play a little defense to win it all. So if you are, like you said, in those top three teams, you know, the Michigan, the Ohio State, maybe the Iowa, how do you view Illinois if you're one of those fans? I guess we'll leave it at that.
How would I view Illinois if I were a fan of those other teams?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, are they pesky? Do you think that they're better than you? Are they, you know, are they a legitimate opponent? Like, how are you taking them seriously?
I mean, if you're not taking Illinois seriously, then, you know, maybe you've been drinking or something.
That's all we needed to hear. Yeah, thank you. Yeah
no, they're another leading question. They're really good. Like, guys, I don't know where you guys are on this. I think they're a legitimate national champion contender.
All right, we can cut the. All right, thank you so much, Dave, for joining us here today. We really had a great time.
That's all you really wanted me to say.
Yeah,
that was easy. No, I mean, like, what else do you need? I mean, you got a dominant big man. You have maybe one of the top two or three guards in the country. You got a really good group of supporting players. You got depth. You got a style of play that is kind of very much their own, I think that they run really well. I mean, I just think they do everything really well. So I just don't think it's a stretch to say that Illinois has a chance to be a national championship team. They have a chance to be knocked out in the second round too, but I think they're really, really good.
I
think what another part of that question though is like Michigan and Ohio State, they have the football rivalry. I know it probably expands to all of the rest of the sports. Are they just looking at each other now trying to knock each other off, or are they actually worried about Illinois? So like are Michigan, like, can you tell if Michigan or Ohio State fans are actually worried about Illinois, or are they just caring about each other?
Yeah, I just don't feel like I have my finger on the pulse of the fan base, Josh. I guess I just look at it and say, you know, this is a team that kind of has everything that you need. They're coming off one of their worst performances of the year. I'll be interested to see. My guess is they'll play significantly better tomorrow. I think what we saw in the Nebraska game was a team that if they come out flat, can be beaten. The fact that they weren't, I think probably had as much to do with Nebraska as it did with Illinois. I mean, I thought Nebraska kind of gave the game away, but you got to be able to take it. And, you know, you have a player like Io, who I thought was, you know, he is an All-American, and he played like an All-American on Friday night. And, again, you have a player there who can literally take over a game. And I just don't think there are that many guys like that in the country. I mean, he's just a different breed.
Well, you mentioned there not being that many guys like him in the country. So do you think he can overtake Garza or anyone else who you think is in the lead for that National Player of the Year, Big Ten Player of the Year? Can he win either of those awards? Or do you think Garza has it wrapped up at this point?
I don't think Io DeSumo can be National Player of the Year. I'd be really surprised. I think Big Ten Player of the Year is interesting now. And you could say, well, everyone's saying Luka Garza's National Player of the Year, and now you're saying that Io can give him a run for Big Ten Player of the Year, so why can't Io be National Player of the Year? I guess I just feel like, I mean, first of all, you've got a few other guys who are in that conversation. I mean, that's not just a Big Ten conversation, right? You got half of Gonzaga's team to begin with. Certainly Baylor's got a couple candidates there. I guess I just feel like it's not unique to a Big Ten conversation, but I think that Big Ten fans who watch enough have seen DeSumo, take over games. Garza has not been as good here of late as Io has. And so I think kind of as you study it more closely and really watch both players night in and night out, I think maybe DeSumo ends up with an argument for it. Whereas kind of in the National Player of the Year, I just feel like so much of that, I don't want to say it's already decided because it isn't already decided, but I think it's hard to pick up kind of late year momentum and become National Player of the Year. Not that Io wasn't great from the word go. I just don't think that the rest of the country is thinking of him in that vein. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's a fair answer. Yeah. No, I think it's a very fair answer.
So I think he could surpass Luka for Big Ten Player of the Year? I have begun to think that in the last week or two. Not that he will, but that conversation is not a done deal. You know, I think I sat here for a long time and just said, you know, this is a foregone conclusion. Luka Garza's Big Ten Player of the Year. I don't necessarily think that's the case anymore. But again, I just don't think that he has the momentum that he would need at this point to be National Player of the Year.
Maybe if you could just start slipping that in on the pregame and postgame shows, start telling us how, start telling the viewers how maybe Io
just plant the seed
in the BTN viewers. Maybe he'll the media will start to change their minds. But
yeah, we know you're an impressionable guy. So kind of off of that, who would you say is sharpied in on the first team All Big Ten? Luka, Io. Is there anyone else who is sharpied in versus penciled in? Who still has work left to be done?
I think first team All Big Ten is going to be really hard, Johnny. And we've kind of been, you know, going through this a little bit in some of our shows. In fact, Andy Katz, I know I did a game with him on the Days All Run Together. I want to say that was Saturday. And he put up his first team All Big Ten. And the player that he was kind of vacillating on was Kofi Coburn. And whether or not he should be there or EJ Liddell should be there. I think Garza DeSumo for sure. You know, Trace Jackson Davis probably there. Marcus Carr having a great year. Is EJ Liddell there? Is it Coburn? Travion Williams, I think, has a really good argument. I'd say it's probably like that group of seven.
Yeah.
And then you're probably choosing five among those seven. I don't really see anyone else in my mind who would be in that conversation beyond those seven. I think then you go beyond that and you're talking about second team players.
Which is weird because the team in first place, Michigan, you didn't mention a single player.
Oh, well, did I say Hunter Dickinson?
Yeah, Hunter Dickinson's got to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I didn't say Hunter Dickinson, he'd be on my list too. So I think those are the seven. I mean, Hunter Dickinson's had an incredible year. And he was phenomenal again last night. Like you just see even when he doesn't make a play, he impacts plays. They are so good in the paint. I mean, they completely shut down. Think about this, guys. Potter and Reavers combined had zero rebounds.
I saw that stat
just a wild
on Twitter
wild
as the
stat.
Game was going on, and I just could not believe that was even a real thing. It's insane.
It's absurd, yeah. Right? I mean, it's totally crazy. So, yeah, so I think it's not just Dickinson. I mean, I think there's some deeper issues with the front court at Wisconsin. But again, I just, you know, Hunter Dickinson absolutely has to be in that group of potential first-team All-Big Ten players.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the matchup we really want to see is Coburn versus Dickinson. Do you think that the Big Ten will reschedule the Michigan-Illinois game, or will we be forced to crown a champion without that game being played?
I hope so, Johnny. We talked about this last night on the Big Show about kind of what the priorities should be for the Big Ten. And it's a challenging spot, right, if you're Michigan. Because they're going to have to play a lot of games here in rapid succession. I mean, we're seeing Nebraska Tuesday and Wednesday night play back-to-back games, right, on the road against Maryland. And I think from Michigan's point of view, you say, and, you know, all due respect to Nebraska, but you kind of say, well, hey, we're not doing that, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, we had no positive tests, shut down out of an abundance of caution due to this, you know, strain of the virus that was running through our athletic department, but hey, we're not playing, you know, back-to-back nights. And how do you strike the balance? I mean, if you're Michigan, would you rather play the Northwestern game or the Illinois game? I'm thinking you'd probably rather play the Northwestern game, right? So what do you do? Do you, you know, they have two games. They missed a game against Michigan State. They have a game against them at the end of the year. You know, I know you want to get that game in. Do you need to get both of them in? I think these become really, really challenging questions. The one thing I do think should be a priority, and I think the thing that would kind of suggest that it's a good idea for Michigan to play Illinois is if we're going to have an inequity in terms of the number of games they're going to be played to determine a Big Ten champion, I feel like at a minimum, everyone ought to play one another at least once. And so I would say that would be a strong argument in favor of playing that game. And maybe there are trade-offs to be made. I mean, maybe you shuffle around the schedule. And it's not only, you know, maybe you swap games and you have three or four teams involved in it and you figure out, okay, hey, we really want Michigan to play Illinois. And what can we do to make that more palatable to Michigan? And I think those are legitimate conversations to have.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think what we really want is some clarity and some closure. And I mean, do you think like the Big Ten and Michigan should maybe give us some more clear answers regarding the cancellation of that Illinois game? Because at the same time, their women's team played on the same day and you see other sports going back before, say, the basketball team, which waited all the way until Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we deserve an explanation? I don't know. I mean, I guess I have looked at this whole season, guys, as maybe this is just me being a lot older than you guys. I've just kind of looked at it as thank goodness we have something.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful we have it. I mean, I think I, you know, I sat there on our set on whatever that was, August 11th or whatever, when the Big Ten football season was canceled, August 12th, maybe. And just thought, man, I just can't believe this. Like, are we going to go through this whole year with no Big Ten sports? And I've just looked at all of it, not to be trite or anything, but it just feels like kind of a gift. And so, you know, like if we don't get exactly the matchups we were hoping for in the regular season in basketball, maybe we crown a champion who we look at their schedule and say, that schedule was significantly easier than the schedule of the team that finished in second place. I guess I just can't, you know, stand up and pound my chest and cry injustice over that. I just don't know. I mean, I hear you. I get it. Maybe there's a reasonable explanation. Maybe there isn't. I truly have no idea what it is, but I guess I just can't get bent out of shape about it because it just feels so much better than what I feared it was going to be.
Yeah. See, I think we all had the same opinion as you during the football season and seeing the Ohio State standings. But then when it comes to us and it matters to us with Michigan and Illinois, then we're like, no.
We've got rules here. We need to play the games. Yeah.
You were okay not playing Ohio State in football. Is that what you're saying?
No, we were okay with letting Ohio State play in the championship instead of Indiana. We didn't really worry about that too much.
But now that it affects us in a once in a lifetime Illinois season, we're like, oh, absolutely. Let's get these games in. But yes.
Right. But here's my point on this. Whether or not they play Michigan won't determine whether or not they can win NCAA tournament. I mean, I guess I look at it as isn't the goal. I mean, I understand wanting to win the Big Ten, and far be it for me, you know, the host of the Big Ten Network, to say winning the Big Ten isn't important. It's really important.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not trying to minimize that.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, like, the once in a lifetime part is about the NCAA tournament, isn't it?
Yeah. Hanging a banner is nice.
Yeah, I think we do have a little bit of an inferiority complex as Illini fans who we started school in 2014. We haven't seen them make a tournament. We haven't seen, I guess the first time we saw an above 500 record was last year when we didn't have a tournament. So we're kind of like, we want to point to something and say like, look, we did it.
Right. And that's maybe the Big Ten title or a chance at Michigan. Or an NCAA title. We'll see. But we want to hang a banner, and that's an opportunity to hang a banner. But yes, just the fact that we have games, I think, is just a phenomenal gift.
I thought we weren't going to talk about our inferiority complex. But I guess
we're going to talk about
it. You know, it's a little therapeutic here.
Yeah, sometimes it's therapeutic.
So I want to transition to a bit of a more hard-hitting topic. You split time between the studio and calling games. I think your most recent game was Northwestern on the call with Andy Katz. I'm curious, what's working with Andy like? Does he have any pregame routines, any weird superstitions, anything like that? Or is it just like awesome seeing a pro like that kind of prepare for each game and kind of get in the weeds?
And shouldn't you ask Andy Katz what it's like to work with me, Sam?
He's not answering our emails.
Just need to get him
right
on.
Now.
Yeah, he's not answering.
We would love to have him on.
So I've known Andy Katz like longer than you guys have been alive, probably. Is that true? What year were you born?
96.
Yeah. Okay. So not quite. So I met Andy. I think he came to ESPN in 1998. I got to ESPN in 1996. So Andy had been a reporter at the Fresno Bee, and it was amazing, right? So he would keep calling ESPN's assignment desk, and he'd say to them, "I know who's going to be the next coach at, you know, pick whatever school it is." You know, they were hiring coach. He'd say, it's going to be, you know, whoever. And he'd say, you can report it, but you have to say the Fresno Bees Andy Katz reports. And they were like, all right, whatever. So, you know, we'd start the Fresno Bees Andy Katz is reporting that, you know, school, you know, Mike Davis is going to succeed Bob Knight or whatever it was. I don't even remember. So, and so after about, you know, 2 years of doing that, he said, you know, you could just hire me and then I could be ESPN's Andy Katz. And that was essentially how it worked. So, and then he moved to the same town I lived in, and we became very good friends. He and Doug Gottlieb and I spent a ton of time together with our wives and families. So, I mean, I've known Andy forever. So the thought of calling a game with him, I mean, you know, we're just kind of, it's no different than what we would have done 20 years ago, you know, sit around together, watch basketball and talk about it. You know, we just had a few more people listening. So I can't really give you any great inside baseball on Katz other than I think he was the first person I ever knew with a cell phone. You know, he had to get it surgically removed from his ear, I think, at one point. But, you know, he's incredible. Like, he just has all the connections in the college basketball world and a great friend on top of that.
I was going to say, I feel like he's always on the phone or tweeting, I guess, now. Does he ever text you late at night about his Big Ten tiers?
About his what?
About his Big Ten tiers, like his updated rankings or anything like that.
Like T-I-E-R-S, not necessarily.
Or T-E-A-R-S.
If he is crying. I don't know if he is crying about it.
I was going to say, the conference has never moved him to tiers that I'm aware of.
He loves Big Ten basketball. You never know.
I don't know. He has not asked me, you know, do you think Maryland is tier two or tier three at any point? But he takes back and forth. He'll send me every single – this is great Katz stuff. He'll send me everything he's posting on the Big Ten Network site. I guess, like, am I supposed to retweet it? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. He has, like, 10 times as many Twitter followers as me, if not more. I don't know, 20. Like, you want me to retweet it, you know? Like, I don't know. So – he's a piece of work.
Yeah, that sounds like my dad sending me texts about different things that have been happening to keep me up to date.
Like a day after a huge news story breaks and like, have you seen this? It's like, yes, it's everywhere on the internet. Like, of course I've seen it. Yes.
And I love the Andy Katz breaking stories pre-Twitter, just calling up the ESPN news desk. Like, it's crazy to think that Twitter didn't exist and that's how you just broke news about coaching changes.
Yeah, I can't even.
I mean, guys, I got started at ESPN because they launched something called ESPN News, which, you know, still kind of exists, but not in the same form. It was basically like, you guys are familiar with CNN headline news, right? Like top and bottom of the hour, mm-hmm. right? Top stories. So it was that concept for sports. And we were the way that people got their scores. Like, that was how you found out who won the game, right? And then there was a breakthrough in maybe like 1999 where they convinced the advertisers to let them run the bottom line through the commercials. And that was amazing, right? Like that there was going to be even more information out there. I mean, like that was how people found out who won. And I know it's so crazy to your generation, but you actually had to turn on the television and, you know, or listen to the radio.
The what?
For sports at 15 and 45 on WBBM, yes. News Radio 78. Like, that was how you found out who won the game.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny you bring up ESPN News because we were going to ask, like, what was that transition like? We saw you were a CBS reporter in the Quad Cities to then move to the big leagues at ESPN. Like, what was that transition like?
Oh, I mean, it was surreal. I mean, I could go on for hours about it. I would say, so I have two good stories about it. The first one is probably like a week or two into it. They had an all on-air staff meeting. And so I go into this meeting and it's in a conference room. And at that point, there were probably... well, there were 13 of us who were hired, I think, for ESPN News at the launch, including Mike Greenberg was part of that group. Mm-hmm. Chuck Arfine, who, you know, of course, is in Chicago now, Comcast Chicago. Yeah, our Chuck was part of that group. Our Chuck Greeny and I all lived in the same apartment building. That was kind of fun.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
And then John Butchegross was part of that group. He's still there. Other than that, you know, that was it. Everyone's kind of left. But anyway, I'm digressing. So there were maybe 20 ESPN anchors before we got there. And then you had us. So maybe 35 or 40, somewhere in there. And they have this meeting and you're just like, you're sitting. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I was the weekend sports anchor in the Quad Cities. And now I'm sitting in this, you know, conference room with like Chris Berman and Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann and Chris Fowler. And I mean, it's just like, you really felt like it was like MTV punked and they were going to come and say like, you know, just kidding.
That's a star studded room right there. Like those are some of the OGs of
close
like,
your eyes and you know who's talking.
Yeah.
Just by their
Sports
voice.
Center yeah. and ESPN like anchors. Like those are some of the,
it was unbelievable. Rooms. So as part of that, so at the end of the meeting, they say, you know, does anyone have, you know, anything they want to bring up? And Olbermann stands up. and starts in on this diatribe about that the loudspeaker system is too loud, and that the paging. So they would, the way that you would like, you would contact someone, because we didn't have, you didn't have like internal messaging yet on the computers. And so the way that you would contact someone was you would page them and say, you know, Keith Olbermann, call, you know, 2640 or whatever. And he'd call, and it was too loud for him. And so he was complaining about it, and they just kind of rolled their eyes and they said, you know, Keith, if you want to start a petition to see if other people agree with you, you know, kind of dismissively, you know, go ahead and do it. And so then it's like a half hour later, and I'm sitting at my desk, and I feel this presence looming over me, and I look up, and it's Keith. And he goes, which one are you? Dave, right?
That's an amazing impersonation, by the way. Like, that sounds a lot like him.
And I said, yeah, my name's Dave. And he says, all right, I'm gonna do the petition. This is true. And so I'm like, Keith, I just want to say, first of all, I love your work. And I've been watching you for years, and I'm honored to be working with you and all that. And I said, but I just got to tell you, 3 weeks ago, I was the weekend sports anchor at the worst station in the 88th market. And now I'm at ESPN. I just don't really feel comfortable signing petitions about the loudspeaker system. I actually made him laugh, and he just kind of walked away and was like, no, I get it. I have no idea what happened. The loudspeakers remained really, to his credit, in his defense, unconscionably loud. I mean, they really were loud.
So he did have a point.
Like, he had a point, but yeah, it just didn't feel like it was worthy of a petition.
That's amazing. Go ahead, Sam.
I was just going to say real quick. So I have heard, on the contrary, the ESPN Cafe is like one of the coolest places in the world. Is that true? Was that like a big thing back when you were there?
Okay, you're saying that it's good? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've heard it's like amazing.
Yeah, okay. So when I first got there, the cafeteria, there was like this little teeny room that had like three vending machines. You had this one woman in there who would make these turkey wraps. It had like a cauldron of soup.
Not exactly the luxury.
I am not exaggerating either. And Mike Greenberg and I still laugh about this to this day. All right. Like, how pitiful it was. And then they built this new cafeteria building. And I mean, who knows what it looks like now? I haven't worked there in 15 years, so it may even be better. But it was, I mean, it was as if you had died and gone to heaven the day they opened that cafeteria. It was the happiest day in the history of ESPN. I mean, people were, it was amazing. It had like this sandwich bar and this pasta bar. And you could, it was literally my oldest daughter, who's a freshman in college now, it was her favorite restaurant in the state of Connecticut. Like, she, all she wanted to do was go eat at the ESPN cafeteria. So we went from, I mean, it was the outhouse to the penthouse.
Wow.
it really was. It was quite good. Yeah, quite good.
That sounds amazing.
That's like probably the best restaurant that no one gets the opportunity to go sit in. But so you were at ESPN, and then you got, did you pitch or did you interview? How'd you get to Big Ten Network? You've been there since the beginning. Were you poached, or what was the scenario to get there?
Poached would be kind of overstating it. I mean, they were looking for someone to kind of be their lead studio host, and contacted me through my agent to gauge whether or not I would have interest. And my contract was actually coming up at ESPN. I was gonna be signing what would have been my fourth contract, I think, there. And I just kind of felt like I ought to at least see what was out there. I didn't really understand what the Big Ten Network was going to be. I don't think I grasped it entirely, kind of that this was going to be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, that it was the volume of games we were going to have. Like, but I felt like I owed it to myself at least to go listen to it, if for no other reason, honestly, than, you know, kind of create a little leverage with ESPN. And so I said to my wife, you know, we're not going to move. But I need to go out there and listen to these people. And I had lunch with the guy who was the original executive producer, who has since moved on. And we're about 20 minutes into this lunch, and he's describing it to me. And first of all, he's making it clear, like, I'm their guy, you know, like, we want you, right? You're our, you know, he was kind of working under the assumption that I had come to, like, you know, get the job. And I'd actually come to get offered the job, but not necessarily to take it. And but we're like 20 minutes in, and I'm thinking, this sounds great. This sounds right up my alley. I mean, I think I would love this. And so I remember they were in a temporary office on Michigan Avenue. And so I, you know, we walked me back to the office and, you know, we talked again for a while. I met a couple other people there and said goodbye. And then I like walked to Water Tower Place and went like into the, you know, like the most obscure corner, like, you know, the women's dress aisle and, you know, Nordstrom's or whatever. So I wouldn't be near anyone who would know who I was. I called my wife on my cell phone. I was like, I think I might actually want this job. And her response, I'll never forget it as long as I live, was, that wasn't the plan.
Funny how that happened.
That has to be pretty tough.
Yeah. But she, it's been great. I mean, obviously I'm from here, you know, I went to Glenbrook North and grew up in Chicago. And
Johnny's a alum of the university of the high school as well.
Dave,
you're a GBN guy.
Yeah. GBN
you,
guy.
Johnny.
Grew up on Willow and Landwehr. Are you a Chris Collins guy or a John Shire guy?
Well, now, can't you be both? I don't understand.
If you had to pick one.
As a human being or as a basketball player?
Basketball player.
Yeah, yeah.
Shire was a better basketball player than Chris, I think. Which isn't to say Chris wasn't phenomenal. But you have to understand, too, Johnny, like, when I went to Glenbrook North, like, you know, they went like 5-23 in basketball, right? Like, you know, and the center would be like 6'2". Right. And, you know, with like maybe a 4-inch vertical. So the notion of Glenbrook North being good at basketball was just absurd. And I would say this about Shire. I think Shire may have had the single best high school career in the history of the state of Illinois. To win a large school state championship at Glenbrook North with not a single other Division I player on the roster. That's pretty remarkable.
Your last point there made you win your argument because I went to Stevenson when Brunson was there. So I was going to argue that Brunson had it, but without any other D1 player, that you win the argument there.
Yeah. So what's his name from Indiana was on Brunson's team, right?
Yeah. He had Justin Smith. Also had Connor Cashaw, who went to Rice. So you win the argument with having no other D1 player on the team.
Literally no other D1 player.
Can I get a Duye Dukin shout out from Deerfield High School, please? That's our most famous.
That's all we have to contribute.
Yes. He did go to the Badgers. I visited Deerfield High School before I went there. He was like a gym leader. He threw me a huge touchdown pass when I shadowed their gym class. It was awesome. It was the most athletic event I've ever been a part of ever. He was like literally 3 times my height.
I'm noticing a theme here, though.
Wait, I need to understand. Why were you shadowing a gym class?
So I like shadowed the high school because like I had options for where I was going to go to high school. So they're like, oh, you can come like hang out in high school for like a morning. And so like I was at gym class and he was like one of the gym leaders. And they're like, you want to play football? I'm like, of course I want to play football. And Duye was like, yo, kid, go long. And I'm like, oh, I'm for sure going to go long. And then he threw me a touchdown pass. And again, I've never been a part of anything more athletic in my entire life.
What were your high school options? Was it like between there and IMG Academy? And
I had
it sounds like an official visit.
I had
basically.
Was Oak Hill Academy recruiting you?
Being heavily recruited.
Yeah,
by
did
some
you
of the
pick
top.
Up the hat? Go Cliff up, Alexander.
I picked up the yes. I had.
I'm coming home.
I'm coming home. Yeah, I had tons of options, but yeah, a very tall human being. So that's our claim to fame from our high school in the last decade or so for basketball.
Yeah, I figured you were maybe going to say Chris Collins, though, just because of your Northwestern background. I guess supporting him more as a coach than
No, I mean, Chris was like, let's not sell Chris short. I mean, Chris was a phenomenal high school player. Like, he won Mr. Basketball, too. So, you know, a really, really good player. I just think Shire, I mean, they won a state championship. Like, the notion of Glenbrook North winning a state championship in basketball was laughably absurd. And so the fact that they did it was, you know, I think the nod has to go to Shire. Plus, he scored like 21 points in
75
80 seconds or so.
Yeah. Crazy Thanksgiving tournament. He frustrates Illini fans, though, because his coach was Bruce Weber's brother and then chooses to go to Duke instead of Illinois.
Thanks for
right. So
up.
I think that's unfair to Bruce because I happen to like Bruce a lot. I mean, Bruce took over at Illinois when Shire was a sophomore, I think, right?
That
John Shire was offered by Marquette when he was in eighth grade. So I just think Illinois was behind the eight ball at that point. And to say that, you know, his brother should have sent him to Illinois or whatever. I mean, I know it bothers Illinois fans, but I just think that's unfair. You know, like that recruiting process was well underway at the point that Bruce got involved in it. Just my two cents.
Yeah. And I mean, Dave was my gym teacher, so I never gave him a hard time about it.
That's hilarious.
Speaking of Northwestern, were there any other, besides Mike Greenberg, which you've talked about, were there any other Northwestern students you were at school with at the same time that you interacted with and formed a relationship with? Fortunately, you're kind of like a few years older than Darren Revelle, so you didn't get to be with him. But is there anyone else?
You're saying like famous Wildcats?
Yeah, the people that like.
I mean, I did radio with J.A. Adonde.
Wow.
He was on the WNUR sports staff when I was, as was Josh Lewin, who, you know, is a pretty well-known play-by-play guy. Let's see. Seth Myers was in my fraternity, but he pledged the year after I left. But, you know, certainly have a lot of mutual friends. I don't know. I guess that's...
interesting. Just wondering, because being someone who goes to Northwestern, I know you didn't study journalism, but being in it, everyone likes to claim the Northwestern journalism school, and now that you are a journalist, I guess it would be interesting to see who you interacted with.
Yeah, yeah. Those would probably be the headliners.
Got it.
Yeah, I think that's why we like you, though, because you're not the same Big J journalist with the Medill stuffy attitude.
Didn't they lose their accreditation, though? Was there, like, some big controversy about that? Right? Didn't they?
I don't know what the story is with that. I don't know.
He's going to climb.
No, I honestly don't know. Medill lost its accreditation?
Didn't I hear something about? Maybe I'm just completely making it up. I don't know. Maybe it was a dream.
Regardless, let's go back to more of your studio analyst. Do you prefer doing that versus calling games, or which one? Which one would
I
you say?
You... I don't mean to, like, you know, be kind of vanilla here, Josh, but what I love about it is that I get to do both. The travel wears on you for games. I would love to, you know, maybe kind of going forward, you know, do more games in Evanston, Champaign, West Lafayette, and Madison. Mm-hmm. And fewer games that involve getting on an airplane.
Has the Zoom world helped you out? Or
we're doing all our games remote now. So, and I don't, you know, doing games remote is not something I want to do. You know, I want to be at the game. It's really challenging to call a game that way. But the travel wears on you, you know, like if you go out and you're, you know, wherever it is, just, you know, I'm at Penn State, and the game ends up being a 20-point game one way or the other. And then you're like, okay, now I got to go back to the hotel. I got to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to the airport, get on an airplane, you know, get back to Chicago, go in and do studio tomorrow. Those are challenging days. So, you know, I'd say that's the only negative of the play-by-play is just it is a lot of travel. But I love doing games. I mentioned John Butchergrass earlier. When I started doing games at ESPN, and I probably did – yeah, somewhere around like 15 or 20 games, maybe each of the last 6 years I was there. A lot of it was championship week. I'd do five or six during championship week often. But I remember I was doing a sports center with John Butchergrass, and we're in a break, and he said, you know, how did you get to the point where they, you know, how did that work with you doing games? Like, what happened there? And, you know, I kind of explained to him how it worked out. And I said, is that something you'd be interested in? And he said, looked at me, and I mean, this is literally 17 years ago, and this quote has always stayed with me. He said, well, I don't think any of us got into this business to sit in a studio in Bristol, Connecticut. I was like, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, there is something to being at the game. But I guess I would also say that as I get older, you know, there's a balance to me of, you know, I've been a lot, and I don't mean to say, I'm not saying this in any kind of a look at me way. But I've been to a lot of national championship football games. I've been to a lot of Final Fours, mm-hmm. you know, and so those events still get you going, but you know, it, I think there's just a balance to be had there. I couldn't be, you know, I couldn't be Kevin Kugler, honestly, you know, who goes and does, you know, 150 events on the road a year or whatever it is. I mean, I just couldn't do it. I don't think I have the physical stamina for it. And I just think it's a hard way to make a living. You know, you're on a ton of airplanes and a ton of hotels. You miss a lot of big events at home, which I do anyway, working weekends and stuff. But yeah, I like the balance of it. I like kind of the way I have it now.
Well, speaking of national championship games, you called the Illinois South Florida game at Soldier Field. Was that the saddest Illinois game that you've ever called ever? I mean, I'm still sad from that game. We were there. I mean, full disclosure, we were, I don't know, socially lubricated, would you call it, prior to the
tailgating.
Game? Tailgating, I think the kids like to call it, and we were amped, we were fired up. Yeah, that was. I mean, we made rivals with a school who I didn't even know you could be a rival with in South Florida. I mean, that was a tough one. But we watched that YouTube video. There is a YouTube video, really cool one, of a day in the life of Dave Revson, and it's you on that day of calling the game. You're in the studio 7:30. You're doing the pregame show. You're driving to the stadium. You're doing the game. And then the day's not over. You're coming back to the studio to wrap up the day. That's like a 17-hour, 19-hour day. Walk us through that day. That was insane.
It was an honest day's work, man. yeah, it was. So they basically came to me. That was a day where we must have had, you know, those non-conference football days are they're jam-packed. And I think we might have had 6 or 7 games on the network that day. And I think they just ran out of play-by-play guys. You know, I'm not really a football play-by-play guy. That was the second game I've ever done. The other one was an Illinois game too. I did them against Western Kentucky in Champaign. Like,
great game.
The year before that.
Was that
I
our
think.
First game?
Was that our, that might have been our freshman
one of our
year.
First ones.
One of our first games ever.
No, I think that was 2017,
was
right?
It?
That was, oh, yeah. One of Lovey's, well, no, I guess his second year, but
it
one
was
of the
Lovey.
Two games
it was
we
Lovey.
Won. One of the two games we won that season.
Yeah.
Illinois did win. Western Kentucky was so awful, I couldn't believe it. And they had been great the year before. Jeff Brohm was their head coach.
Yes.
And they
yes.
scored like 50 points a game. And then he left, and they were so utterly inept offensively with the same guys. It was crazy. But anyway.
Chase Couch that day. One second. Sorry. Chase Couch that day was 14 for 25 with 0 touchdowns and an interception. It was a bad day for Illinois.
And they won.
Yeah.
I think he had a TD run, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did have that.
But yeah, for more context, the week before, we had like a last-minute comeback against Ball State to barely eke out a victory and then went on to not win a game in the Big Ten. So that was a season.
So you got to see half our wins in person.
When you travel to Champaign for something like this and you see a Big Ten team like Illinois who's not really playing like a Big Ten team, are you like, oh my God, like I can't believe I had to come here and watch this?
You could be honest. We won't be offended.
I think that the novelty of doing play-by-play for football was enough for me that I was like, you know, I enjoyed it. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, like it wasn't a great game. I mean,
no.
I did the pregame and halftime and postgame for the, you know, the Texas USC Vince Young Reggie Bush National Championship. So
slightly,
you know,
better football.
I know what
game.
A good football game looks like.
Yeah, that's an insane football game.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know, I, but you know, look, I tackled the assignment with enthusiasm, and the day that you guys were talking about, I mean, that was a fun day. So they basically said, like, I don't know that we have enough play-by-play guys to cover this. How would you feel? The game's at Soldier Field. How would you feel if you did? Because normally it's a 17-hour day anyway. Like, we're there at 7 o'clock in the morning and we leave at midnight. Wow. You know, that's what Jerry and Howard and Joshua and I do. So, you know, that part of it was going to be the same. But the thought was, hey, you duck out after the pregame and go over to Soldier Field and call the game. And I was like, yeah, you know, that sounds great. I didn't realize it would be. And that was a bad game. Those were both terrible football games.
It was a bad game.
Right?
It was like, a really bad game. It was a really bad
game. It's one thing if it's like a bad game, but it's, you know, it's like 42-35 and gets to call lots of big plays. And but there really wasn't. There wasn't much of
that.
Well,
there was the play where Illinois blew it at the end where the ball was thrown over the DB, Illinois' DB, and then we blew it in like the last 15 seconds. So that must have been like kind of a fun play. To call.
It's a great day when two Stevenson players get put into a podcast. I'll just say that. That was a Stevenson defensive back who let up that touchdown there.
Sorry.
Who was that?
Michael Marques.
Marques.
Walk on.
Oh, yeah. The brothers Marques.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Marques brothers, absolutely.
Yeah. I remember they had a receiver, like, in the back of the end zone on the last play. And
yeah, small. He was out of bounds, though. Ricky was out of bounds, and then there should have been 1 second on the clock, but I don't know if it really would have mattered. I don't know if that really...
The level of detail. I mean, this is like... This is what makes the Big Ten great. Like, the level of detail that you have on maybe one of the 10 most meaningless football games to be played in the Big Ten in the last decade. The level of detail of retention, that's remarkable.
I don't know if that should be a compliment.
I find it concerning.
Yeah, I would say it's more problematic.
It was kind of traumatizing for us. But
I'm not saying it's socially acceptable.
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
We just talking to a mic. We hope someone listened. This is our safe space.
It's a safe space.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you've talked about, though, kind of road tripping from campus to campus. How would you rank maybe like the top three campuses in the Big Ten? And where would you recommend us road tripping to once it gets safe again?
All right. Well, I assume you guys have been to Madison. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's a great place. Great place to watch a football game. It's kind of two different questions though, right? Like there's the question of what campus do you like? And there's the question of where to go for a football game. So
let's say where to go for a football game. We're thinking about tailgating. And I do also want to know when you're in the bus with Jerry DiNardo and Howard Griffith, what those stories are like.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
We might have to do another podcast.
Oh, no.
I mean, the most fun 3 weeks of my year. I mentioned my wife a little while ago. So we're maybe like 3 years into the bus tour, 4 years in the bus tour. We're out with another couple and it's maybe the day or two before we're going. And I'm like, yeah, you know, we get on this bus for 18 days and you know, we drive around the whole Big Ten and we go watch football practice. We got to do a show every day. And you know, I'm trying to like garner sympathy for this. And we have three young kids at home at that point. And my wife is just like, hold everything. Okay. Like, you get on the bus with those two guys who are two of your best friends in the world. You go out. It seems to me you eat a great dinner every single night. You clearly have your fair share to drink. You watch football, which you love, and you talk about it with those guys. And you don't have to, you know, be home with the kids. Like, tell me what the issue is here. And I've stopped complaining about it since then. She kind of called me to the carpet. But the bus tour is so much fun. Those are truly two of my favorite people in the world. They are both hilarious. You know, we're at the point where we've spent a lot of time together. I think we figured out at the end of the last bus tour, which, you know, unfortunately was before the 2019 season because we didn't do one this year, that we had spent more than a half a year of our lives on that bus together.
Do you take like any time off between, say, I guess like July through April? Like, it seems like you're just grinding between college football, college basketball, and then you've got, like, the training camp, like, it seems like 24/7, 10 months out of the year.
Yeah, that time, I mean, 10 months might be a stretch on that. I'd say, like, 9 months is pretty intense. So I say starting Big Ten media days and finishing up really after the Final Four, I don't take much time. Maybe a few days around Christmas. We kind of tend to go skiing as a family around then. Other than that, it's a lot. But I mean, the trade-off of the summers is really good. You know, they kind of said from the very beginning, we're going to leave you alone that time of year, and they really have. So that's been great.
Do you have a preference between football and basketball? Like, are you more excited during one season? Do you just have like an affinity more so for one sport than the other that you enjoy covering?
Well, I would say, I mean, I love both sports. My two sports passions are college football and college basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, like the NBA playoffs could be going on and I'll check it out, but I'd much rather like, you know, the Western Conference Finals or a really good, you know, Purdue-Michigan State game, I'd take the Purdue-Michigan State game every, you know, every day of the week.
Yeah.
Love
like
it.
That's just kind of that's how I'm wired. So I love both sports. I like the rhythm of football a lot. Like I like the notion of kind of have the games on Saturday and then you kind of build up then, you know, all week to the next, you know, set of games and kind of, I like the previews and breaking them down. You know, basketball is a little more frenetic, maybe isn't the right word for it, but the drum beat is a little bit faster in basketball. And so I don't always think you have, you know, if you're covering it night in and night out, maybe you don't have the same, you know, it just doesn't have that same rhythm. I do really enjoy doing play-by-play, which I, other than, you know, the two Illinois games, which we've mentioned, and probably have gotten more than their fair share of discussion on this podcast. We've probably been talking about more on this podcast than on any other forum in the history of the world.
In the world. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
History has been made.
Even Lovey didn't want to talk about them this much.
No, probably not.
I don't think we did either.
No, we're kind of savants.
Yeah, it just happened.
Particularly Lovey didn't want to talk about them. Yeah. So I would say, you know, I enjoy kind of the variety of what I do with basketball, but I love a football Saturday. I mean, on a, you know, crisp fall day in the Big Ten, full slate of games. It's tough to beat that.
I am ready for that.
Yes, we're ready for that.
Definitely ready for that. So as it relates to Northwestern, I know you're obviously supposed to appear impartial, but I think when you were at school, you probably, if you combine the total wins, maybe you get enough for one bowl game worth. Obviously didn't make the tournament there. So now seeing football be consistently successful, Chris Collins make his first NCAA tournament, Northwestern's first NCAA tournament. What's that like covering that? Like, is there, I'm sure off the screen, you have to be really excited and kind of celebrating that as an alum.
So I would say this, first of all, your math is really good. In my 4 years at Northwestern, Northwestern won a grand total of 6 football games.
Oh my God. There we go.
In 4 years. And what's amazing is I believe 3 of them were against Wisconsin, right? Like, because Wisconsin was as bad as Northwestern,
yeah,
if not worse, right? Like, how crazy is that, right?
Yeah.
And then they won 6 conference basketball games in my 4 years. So it was really bad.
That's even worse than what we saw. Worse.
How do we go back to that? I want that.
That's insane.
It was,
oh my God.
It was appallingly bad. It was really, really bad. So, you know, obviously, look, football is, I think, an amazing story. I mean,
yeah,
they've been consistently good and at times quite good for 25 straight years. I mean, it's really, you know, every once in a while they'll have a bad year here and there. But I mean, they are few and far between. So, yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's neat to see. I mean, I grew up going to the games. My father taught in the business school there. Both my parents went there. So, you know, that was kind of, I mean, I suppose one would say, ironically, that was how I, you know, kind of began to love Big Ten football, was watching arguably the worst team in the history of the league. You know, this side of the last few University of Chicago teams before they dropped out. And yet, you know, I just, I don't know, there was something about it that just sucked me in and that I really loved. So, yeah. And then the basketball, like I went out and covered them in Salt Lake City. I covered that for the Big Ten Network and, you know, that was really fun. And, it was amazing. I mean, it was like a purple party out there, you know, literally like the local news stations were doing stories on Northwestern fans taking over Salt Lake City because it seemed like it, you know, well, it had never happened. It seemed like it might never happen again. And, you know, obviously it hasn't been a great, you know, run since then. So who knows? But yeah, so, but look, I, you know, I always say we have 14 kids at the Big Ten Network and I love them all equally. And I really think you kind of have to, you know, I think one of the things that's been really interesting for me is that you develop relationships within all these programs. And so, you know, I mean, just pick a coach out, Matt Painter, you know, like, I mean, I didn't give Purdue a whole lot of thought one way or the other, but, you know, Matt Painter's become a friend and is, you know, I really respect what he does and I respect the way he runs his program and, you know, multiply that out times, you know, all of those schools. That's not to say every relationship is a, you know, great, you don't necessarily become tight with every coach, but you understand their story and you get to talk to players when you're on the bus tour. You know, one of the things I always say is, you know, like these Rutgers teams, you know, 2 and 3 years ago, they were just so bad, right? I mean, just horrifically bad teams. But you watch them guys in that, like you're out there, it's 90 degrees. You're in Piscataway in August and those guys are working their tails off and they are optimistic and they are fired up about the year and they're not working any less hard than the guys are in Columbus or the guys are in Ann Arbor or Champaign or Evanston or wherever it may be. And you just, you know, you can watch and you can kind of get back on the bus like, you know, yeah, they're not so good. Right. Like that isn't a very good defensive line. I don't know how it's going to work in the Big Ten, but you, empathy is the wrong word, but you root for them, right? Because you want them to have success because you know what it means to them. And so I think that that's the big thing. And I'd say that, you know, about all the schools, just kind of this feeling like where you kind of feel like you're a part of it. And you, it's different than covering, than being at ESPN and saying, well, I host a college football show. Yeah. But I mean, I could talk about Wake Forest and the job Dave Clawson's done sitting in a studio in Bristol, but if I haven't been there with Dave Clawson, it's different. Right. And so to me, that's where it really is, you know, that's what's been really special about the Big Ten Network is to be a part of these different programs. And so, yeah, like I went to Northwestern and certainly when they do well, I'm pleased for them. But I'm also pleased for Michigan State when they do well, because Tom Izzo is one of my favorite people on planet Earth. You know, like that's just kind of the way it is. Like it just you know, it's a really neat part of it.
Wow, that sells the Big Ten better than anybody.
Yeah,
else.
That was amazing. That was
I was going to chime in and say, well, Rutgers and Maryland, you really have 12 kids and two like half kids,
like step siblings.
But then when you humanize them in
right.
such a way where I'm rooting for these kids.
No, I think that's a great point. Like you create these connections, like with the players, with the staff, with the coaches, with the administration. It's hard not to root for them. Like when you see the human side of it and like how hard they actually are working.
Yeah, and we really appreciate the time that you've spent with us, Dave. We have one final question to kind of tie it back as an Illini podcast, which is you spent the first 2.5 years of your life in Urbana, which we saw a nice documentary on your childhood home known as a landmark down there.
I think Mike Hall was the
narrator,
the guy who really put that documentary in motion.
But what was that experience like, and how were you shaped by Champaign-Urbana during those formative years?
So, by the way, so we did this. There was a tailgate feature. It was called like, was it Coming Home? I can't remember what it was, but it was a sponsored element. And, you know, we did it every week. And we did like a fake one for me in Champaign that was going to run on the show. And then some element of the show went long. And so we had to cut the fake one. And we could only run the real one.
We got to get that on the air.
That would have been great, too, with Howard. And everyone made it a big deal about you coming home to Champaign versus Howard.
Yeah,
we got to run that. You got to run that on the air. You got to find, like, 2.5, like, just dead minutes where it's like, by the way, like, this is my story. This is my childhood.
You guys want to know something pretty cool. So, obviously, I have zero recollection of living in Champaign. We,
moved
to Chicago when I was 3. 2.5, I think, actually. But here's something really cool that my parents... well, my dad has passed away, but my mom is still really good friends with the woman who lived across the street from us. My father's best friend, and he has passed away as well. The Tepper family, actually Tepper Electric. You guys,
Lou Tepper.
You guys know Tepper Electric?
Yes.
Okay. So that is his brother's family. This guy was an attorney, but. So she sent my mom a picture of Kamala Harris and her sister hanging out on Pond Street because apparently the neighbors and Kamala's father, like he taught briefly at Illinois and they were friends and involved in some like activist causes and stuff. So Kamala was hanging out on our street and I just would like to know, like, was I you know, did I get to hang out with her? She was a little older than me. Maybe it was my nap time and I missed out when she came up. I don't know.
So that's how Urbana shaped you.
Yeah, that is pretty wild.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, Pond Street was packing some punch back in 1970.
The vice president.
You were best friends with the vice president of the U.S.
I'm sure she'd be really impressed to know that I was hanging out there.
I mean, the Wikipedia pages per street is very high on Pond Street.
Yeah, there's a lot of famous people that live on Pond Street.
Notable, I'm not.
No, she didn't live there. She was visiting.
Or visitors of Pond Street.
Well, I think her younger sister, Maya, though, was born in Champaign. So I guess
you never know. Yeah. So you never know. But Dave, thank you so much. This was absolutely awesome. Thanks so much for taking busy, you know, time out of your 17-hour days. You can watch Dave Revson basically anytime you turn on BTN. He's probably going to be on your screen. So thanks so much, everyone. Maddie signing out. We'll catch you on the next one. ILL.